This episode is brought to you by Opill, the first over-the-counter daily birth control pill available in the U.S. Opill is FDA approved, full prescription strength, and estrogen free. Plus, there's no prescription needed. Finally, the days of needing a prescription for birth control are over. Opill is available online and at most major retailers. Take control of your health and reproductive journey with Opill. Birth control in your control. Use code BIRTHCONTROL for 25% off your first month of Opill at opill.com.
Feel your max with Brooks Running and the all-new Ghost Max 2. They're the shoes you deserve, designed to streamline your stride and help protect your body. Treat yourself to feel-good landings on an ultra-high stack of super comfy nitrogen-infused cushion that takes the edge off every step, every day. The Brooks Ghost Max 2. You know, technically, they're a form of self-care. Brooks, let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
How many times, Kristen, do you think you have taken a DNA test?
I think that I have quit counting.
That's Kristen V. Brown, who covers health for The Atlantic.
I've taken 23andMe's test at least 3 times. Ancestry, I've taken all the weird little startup ones that used to be around, you know, like the one that you spit in a tube and then they printed you a scarf with your DNA on it. I don't know if you remember that one from like 2016, 2017 era.
At the height of the home DNA test era, she even tested her cat. One of Kristen's human tests caused some mild chaos. Kristen's grandfather was Syrian, but the test concluded that she had Italian ancestry instead.
My aunt, who's a big genealogy enthusiast, she assumed that it meant someone had lied or there was some family secret. But this was like, you know, many years ago. And at that point, there just weren't as many Arab people in the reference databases. So they just kind of picked the next closest thing, which is Italy, you know, it's kind of over there. So it created a minor family drama.
But other than that, the test didn't tell her all that much. She had a good chance of having blue eyes, which she has, a greater than average chance of celiac disease, which she doesn't. One thing Kristen does think about is where the data from all those tests went, and just how much of it is lurking somewhere in a company database or even on the internet. Because right now, the company 23andMe, which has Kristen's DNA data and that of 15 million Americans, is teetering on the edge of collapse. It's very personal information. Your DNA data says pretty much everything about you. A few years ago, Kristen asked a genealogist to try to figure out who she was based entirely on her anonymized DNA.
I had gone into it knowing that she would be able to identify me, but I thought it was going to be like, you know, these cold case serial killer dramas where it takes them, you know, a couple of weeks and they have to track down newspaper clippings and, you know, the whole shebang. And it took her 3 hours. And that was really the moment for me in which I realized how much this information is really out there.
Today on the show, if you spit into a tube for 23andMe, it's probably time to think about what happens to your genetic data. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Shifting a little money here, a little there, and hoping it all works out? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can be a better budgeter and potentially lower your insurance bill, too. You tell Progressive what you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll help find you options within your budget. Try it today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states. Your team members spend over half their time writing, And we all know how that happens. One confusing email turns into 12 confused replies, then a meeting to get aligned. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all the wasted time and money that goes with it. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, everything gets better. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly helps them gain buy-in and action through their communication. Grammarly helps you improve the substance, not just the style, of your writing by identifying exactly what is missing. Teams that communicate better with Grammarly report 25% faster time to resolution for support tickets and 52% less time spent writing sales emails, saving 19 days per year per employee. Grammarly works where you work, from docs to messages to emails. It integrates seamlessly across 500,000 apps and websites. No cutting, no pasting, no context switching. Equip your team with the gold standard of responsible AI. 15 years of experience, just about every IT certification, and never sells your data. Join 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to get results on the first try. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI. In the past few weeks, I've seen the words struggling, flailing, foundering, all of them applied to 23andMe. Do you think those are accurate descriptions of the state of the company right now?
I mean, their stock price has been really not doing so hot for...
I think it's like 30 cents on the day I'm talking to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's not been doing well for almost a year now, I think. But they've already had to ask for an extension once from NASDAQ. The company is currently at risk of being delisted from the stock market because it is doing so poorly. And, you know, shareholders' valuation of the company is reflecting that. And they already flew past the deadline to get the stock price above $1 and had to ask for an extension. So if that's not struggling, I'm not sure what is. Add to that that the fact that the entire board resigned. You know, I've been a reporter covering the healthcare space for a long time and covered a lot of publicly traded companies, and I have never heard of an entire board resigning. So I think it's pretty fair to call things dire, call the company struggling.
23andMe was founded in 2006, just 5 years after the first draft of the human genome sequence was released. It was a moment in which it felt like our genes held the keys to the future.
If you take yourself back to that time, I'm sure you can remember the covers of Time magazine that would have, you know, like DNA, like the covers were almost like holy looking, you know?
Yeah, it's like the photo illustration of the double helix. It was very exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting. And there was this sense that now that we had decoded the human genome, that we had decoded the key to life, the key to our health, that it was just a couple of scientific breakthroughs away from us all being able to live to 100. And, you know, around the time that 23andMe was founded, not long after 23andMe was founded, Anne Wojcicki, CEO, founder, genome visionary, actually went on a news program and talked about how she planned to live to 100, and she viewed the genome as a way to give other people a roadmap to doing that too. And there really was that sense. It wasn't, you know, one crazy Silicon Valley founder coming up with this. That was in the air. That was how we all felt. And what 23andMe wanted to do, what Anne Wojcicki wanted to do, was take that excitement, take that sense that we are on the precipice of really unlocking the key to being healthy, the key to conquering disease, and give it to the average person.
Wojcicki believed in the mission, and she was a high flyer in Silicon Valley. At the time, she was married to Google's Sergey Brin and successfully raised millions of dollars for 23andMe. But the company's expansion ran into trouble when the FDA ordered it to stop marketing its personal genome service kits in 2013.
This was probably the first time that I would say 23andMe was on the brink. Early consumer DNA testing, people didn't know what to do with it because suddenly this thing that you thought of as something you would maybe get from your doctor, that at that time wasn't even really available from your doctor for the average person, was something you could just order online for your self and open it up, and without the assistance of a doctor or genetic counselor or any kind of healthcare practitioner, get this information about your health that might be hard for you to understand, right? Or how much they should panic when they read it. And so that was one of the concerns with FDA. And then I think there were some concerns also about whether it was accurate. And so they sent this warning letter to the company and then eventually told them they needed to pull their tests from market, that these tests were just like not ready for prime time. And so it took 23andMe a number of years to convince the FDA that its tests were not only accurate, right, that they were doing what they said they were doing, but that they were also explaining to consumers what the information meant in a way that would make it acceptable for them to sell these tests without a doctor ordering them.
The company worked with the FDA, and eventually the agency approved the tests to be sold to the public. It suddenly felt like they were everywhere in consumer culture.
A lot of celebrities were doing DNA tests. Oprah kept recommending the test on her annual Christmas gift list. And I think that, you know, in the beginning, there was just this sense that you could learn something about who you were if you took this test. And I think 23andMe and Ancestry, they just rode that wave.
Then it felt like there was just this period of ascendance, like Ellen DeGeneres was giving away tests on her show, and 23andMe was like a buzzword.
Yeah.
John, what's next?
Well, 23andMe Health Plus Ancestry Services helps you understand where you come from and how you and your family are alike with over 75 genetic reports.
You'll get information on what your DNA says about your ancestry and health. The audience can get three kits for their family with this $600 Visa gift card. Wow.
Gradually over time, just this sort of optimism and intrigue. And, you know, we all want to know who we are, right? It's like the eternal human question. Who am I? If I could spend $100 and just give some of my spit to someone and they could tell me who I am, I mean, yes, 100%. Sign me up. But I think the problem is that over time, we realize it didn't really give us the answers we want about that. And that's when these DNA testing companies started to see their sales decline, started to run into trouble.
How did we go from that height to things starting to go wrong for the company?
Yeah, I think that there were a lot of things that happened. It's cliche, but there really was a perfect storm, right? So more than 15 million people have taken these tests at this point. And at this point, it's pretty clear that the biggest selling point is the ancestry information, right? The connecting with your family tree. Because the health information for the average person is not really actionable. 23andMe might dispute that, but I've interviewed a lot of experts that feel that way, right? So are there really more than 15 million people who are like my genealogy loving aunt and really want to take a DNA test? I don't know that there are. And that's why kit sales have slowed. And they haven't just slowed for 23andMe, right? They've slowed for ancestry too. Ancestry was public and it went private a couple of years ago. So you've had kit sales slow, probably because we're at a point of market saturation for people who want to know how Irish they are, or you know what their genes say about their taste for cilantro. But you also had some privacy concerns that may have been elevated by news events, right? The Golden State Killer.
He was found via genetic genealogy activists who kind of slowly traced him down. Yep.
Right. And we have to say it's not with 23andMe, right? But there have
other
with
sites.
Other sites. And 23andMe has said that it has never complied with a subpoena from police for customer genetic data, and it fights them all. But other testing sites have allowed police into the database, right? And so I think there were concerns that your DNA could be used in this way that suddenly was a very concrete sense of how your information could potentially be used in a way you might not like. Late last year, there was also a hack of 23andMe in which consumer data was accessed, right? The company just agreed to a settlement because of that hack, right? So there's the privacy concerns, which Anne Wojcicki has said she thinks have hurt the company. And then there's just the fact of how the company is structured.
23andMe is also a drug development business. The company has partnerships with major drug developers to take genetic data, then try to tailor treatments for genetic diseases. But that effort does not turn a profit quickly. And Kristen says it's only kind of successful.
Well, I think where DNA has been very useful is for rare diseases, right? Think Huntington's, BRCA1 and 2, which, you know, we hear about it all the time, but it's actually a rare disease. And in those cases, right, these are single gene mutations that have a high likelihood of being disease causing. And Huntington's is, you know, basically 100% risk that if you have the variant, you will have the disease. Not all of those are actionable, but some of them, like BRCA1 and 2, those are actionable, right? You can get surgery to help prevent the disease if you know you have those variants. But the truth is, there are very few common diseases for which there's just one gene. Almost all monogenic diseases are rare. And so you have a small subset of the population for which these tests have had an enormous benefit. You know, think about Angelina Jolie writing several years ago in the New York Times about the difference that taking a DNA test made for her and how she decided to have.
Right, she got a preventative mastectomy.
Yes, exactly, because of a DNA test. But those are not the average person. The reason she got the test is because her mother died of breast cancer. So she didn't need to take a 23andMe test and be surprised to find out there was indication already in her family history that she should have this test. And I think that's often the case. When there is a reason for you to take a DNA test, you already know it.
After the break, if 23andMe gets sold, does your data go with it? Have you heard about Doublenomics? It's okay if you haven't. It's extremely niche and practiced by Discover. Here's an example. Discover automatically doubles the cash back earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Innovation is important to the future of many businesses, and processes need to be clear, fast, and ultimately more productive. Take a big step to solving these problems with the Innovation Workspace from Miro. The Innovation Workspace comes loaded with AI-enabled tools to help teams get from idea to output faster. Miro's Innovation Workspace will help your teams accelerate through the full innovation development cycle, helping them to be faster, more productive, and ultimately more effective. Its new AI-powered tools and features can visualize tasks ahead, condense documents to produce summaries in seconds, and even create complex diagrams and flowcharts using natural language. It's designed to complement and sync with existing apps and platforms you use every day, like Jira and Azure, so everything operates smoothly and easily, and everyone's on the same page to rapidly innovate, iterate, develop, and ship. Whether you work in innovation, product design, engineering, UX, Agile, or IT, bring your teams to Miro's revolutionary innovation workspace and be faster from idea to outcome. Go to Miro.com to find out how. That's Miro.com.
This episode is brought to you by Glean. AI has the potential to help everyone be more efficient at work, but only if it deeply understands the data, people, processes, and context specific to your work. That's exactly what Glean's Work AI platform does. Glean has proven to be a helpful tool for finding disparate information across companies. Glean starts by connecting and understanding all your company data across apps you use every day, like Slack and Teams. Glean's powerful AI assistant helps you find answers, generate content, and automate work. With Glean, engineers ship code faster, sales reps better understand their customers, support agents resolve cases more accurately, and IT teams deflect questions and solve issues automatically. Use Glean to build no-code and low-code custom generative AI apps and agents that scale the power of your company's knowledge anywhere it's needed. hundreds of enterprises, including some of the world's leading technology, telecom, retail, manufacturing, and banking businesses, put AI to work with Glean. Visit glean.com/TBD to see how Glean can help every employee at your company do their best work with AI. That's glean.com/TBD to request a demo today. Glean, work AI for all.
What happens to all that data if the company either goes under or gets sold?
So this is a complicated question that lots of people probably have different opinions, but I can tell you what is in 23andMe's terms of service, which is that they view your data as an asset. And if they are sold, bought, etc., your data will be an asset that gets transferred to the new owner, just like everybody else. And the new owner would have to follow the existing privacy rules, but the privacy rules also say you can change the rules. And so people would have an ability to opt out of the new rules. But I think we've all gotten those emails in our inbox that are like, we're changing our terms of service. Opt out within the next 30
except
days.
Delete.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like, how many people are really going to read those and decide to opt out? Most of those just like go to my spam filter now. So, you know, I think that there is a real chance that the terms could change if something happened to the company. And a lot of people might not know. And, you know, 23andMe, as it exists today, has been very clear to me that they want to do everything they can to continue to protect people's privacy and protect their information the same way they have for years. But I mean, once the problem's out of your hands, it's out of your hands. So,
well, if we look at the data breach in which I think almost 7 million of their customers had their data exposed, they just settled this suit in September. There was an interesting little thing where 23andMe didn't tell some of its customers, specifically those with Chinese and Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry, that it looks like whoever hacked this data specifically targeted them. Like it really kind of blows your mind in terms of what could happen to someone's genetic information on the dark web, just across the internet in general.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, a very different political situation, but in China, we have seen genetic information collected and used to target people with ethnic minorities. And I mean, that's not the America we live in today, and I hope that remains the case. But it just goes to show that you can't imagine all the scenarios in the future that this information might be valuable. You can't imagine all the ways it might be used. What is true is it's inherently identifying. And even though people talk about de-identified data, you can't fully strip the identity of something that is inherently identified. And as long as that's true, if you've spent a tube, your information is out there. Maybe take it down from 23andMe, but maybe somebody else who is closely related to you has shared that data already, right? So it's you know, in some sense, 23andMe is just the current iteration of this problem, but it's been going on since we all decided we wanted to find out how Swedish we were, you know?
There's also a question that I have about the difference between regular old privacy breaches that I think, unfortunately, American consumers have become very accustomed to. Oh, there's been a data breach at, you know, insert retailer's name here. Do you think it's different with genetic data, with the way we feel about the sequence of our own genome floating around on the internet?
It's different from, you know, your average password breach, even from a social security number breach, even though that's, you know, horrible. You don't ever want somebody else to get your social security number. But DNA information is just inherently more intimate than any other information that is out there about you. I mean, just think about all the things that it reveals about you. It reveals a lot of our deepest, darkest secrets, right? If your father cheated on your mother and you have a sibling you don't know about, that's in your DNA. Someone else could bring that to your knowledge if you don't want to know it, right? You know, we're in an election cycle. Imagine if the genome of our two presidential candidates were out there. I mean, maybe they already are and just nobody's realized it yet. But imagine how people might weaponize that information against public figures, right? So it's just inherently more revealing. And you can't really control how much it reveals about you, because once the code is out there, people can interpret it their will.
Are there any regulations, federal or state level, that could actually shield any of this data?
Yeah, so there is a 2008 law, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, GINA. And GINA does protect against health insurers using your data. It does not protect against long-term care insurance, life insurance. There are loopholes in GINA. There are some states, California and Florida come to mind, that have additional protections for how insurers could use your data, right? So, I mean, there are protections from, you know, a health insurer finding out you have BRCA1 and denying you coverage based on that. But that doesn't protect against all the ways we might come up with how to use this information in the future. It doesn't protect against people knowing who you're related to, your ethnicity, right? And there's loopholes even in, you know, the kinds of insurance coverage it protects against, right? So I think that the feeling in the privacy community is that the protections that do exist are very lacking.
We're in such a different place right now than we were when the genome was first sequenced or when these tests started becoming commercially available. I wonder if this were to happen today, if someone were to try to bring this product to market today, if it would take off, or if it was really kind of a snapshot of a moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in technology, right, there's these waves of like techno-optimism and then dystopian attitudes towards technology. And I think we're certainly in a more dystopian time. And 23andMe definitely came online at a time of great techno-optimism. And it's interesting because, you know, you look at so many great innovations and they come online in those times. It's almost like we have to be in a time of techno-optimism in order for these great technologies to come to bear. I think about another thing that I spent a lot of time covering, which is IVF. We first started trying to make it happen at a time when we were envisioning, you know, futuristic cities with like flying cars and stuff, right? So I think it probably would have a hard time coming online now, but I think we need those moments of techno-optimism for breakthroughs to happen. And I think, you know, the one thing that I, you know, have to be clear about is when 23andMe came online, we really did think that the genome was it, that it was going to be the cure-all for everything that ails us as people, right? And brought that to the masses. It just turned out that the story was scientifically more complicated. And we don't know what it's going to look like in the future. Maybe there will be another breakthrough that does unlock the power of the genome. It's just at the current moment, it's been, you know, 2 decades, and we haven't really seen that power unlocked for the average person.
Kristen V. Brown, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kristen V. Brown is a health reporter at The Atlantic. And that is it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Patrick Fort, and Shayna Roth. Our show is edited by Paige Osborne. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate, and TBD is part of the larger What Next family. And if you like what you listen to today, the single best way to support our show is to join Slate Plus. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. All right, we'll be back next week with more episodes. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Save on family favorites throughout the store at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get value packs of USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast for the member price of $4.99 per pound. Plus, 18 to 19-ounce cans of Progresso Soup are $1.99 each when you buy four. Member price. Also this week at Safeway, selected varieties of Artisano Bread or Bonds 13.55 to 20-ounce are buy one, get one free when you buy two. Member price. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.